Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a couple of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the tragedy in Norway and speak with a Norwegian cultural anthropologist, Dr. Tuna Brinker, to try to find an explanation for how such callous and methodical mayhem could occur in a country famous for its tolerance, social peace, and cohesion. Then Dr. Thomas Hegghammer, a senior research fellow at the Norwegian Defence Research Establishment, joins us to help explain how the mass murderer was able to kill so many young people for so long, how he got his weapons and explosives, and what motivated the killer. Dr. Hegghammer is quoted in Sunday's New York Times pointing out the irony that the killer's manifesto is an exact mirror image of Al-Qaeda's declarations and manifestos. Then finally, Congressman Alan Grayson joins us to try to make sense of the economic hostage crisis in Washington, D.C., that has the president being whipsawed by Republican walkouts and blackmail to extract concessions by threatening to crash the economy. We will talk about Congressman Grayson's nationwide petition at no-cuts.com, demanding that there be no cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Let's now go to the interview I conducted shortly before coming on the air with Dr. Tuna Brinker, who's a professor of cultural anthropology at the University of Bergen in Norway. We had a bad phone connection, and she had to run out to enjoy her vacation in Vermont. So we'll begin with what we have. Dr. Brinker, as an anthropologist, you would not expect to examine your own tribe, as it were. But it does seem what happened in Norway goes against all that we in the rest of the world think about Norway. It seems very, shall we say, unusual to begin with.
Yes, certainly. And that's the reaction, I think, most Norwegians as well, certainly. I was stunned when I learned about this. And I thought, actually, I have to tell you how I learned about it, because I was arriving at Boston Airport from Norway. And at the passport control, the officer, he saw my passport and he said, Norway. He said, I just got some news out of Norway, Oslo. And I said, I hope they're not bad news. And he said, well, indeed they are. There was a terrorist attack. And I just could not believe that I heard correct. And I thought he must have gotten the place wrong. And then he opened sight and turned the screen towards me so that I could read. And it was just dumbstruck, and I think this is the reaction of most Norwegians.
Well, of course, there is a similarity here with what happened in Oklahoma City back in 1995, in the sense that when that bombing, which killed 168 Americans, among them children, the first reaction in this country was, of course, that it was Islamic terrorists. And I take it that was the first reaction in Norway as well?
Well, actually, it wasn't. They were very careful, as I understand it, the police and others, to say that they were not sure that this was the case. And I think the reason was the target. And I had the reaction when I read this website at the airport in Boston, that it was the attack of the youth summer camp of the governing Labour Party. I immediately thought this cannot be Islamic terrorism. This must be somebody who knows Norway very well and attacks something that's very specific to Norway and Norwegian post-war history. It's so this camp, these summer camps of Labour Party, has a very specific position in Norwegian post-war history, and it's very closely linked with the education of the new political elite that put in place the social democracy in Norway as we know it today, and also trained the coming ruling, the government, you know, like the prime minister, the current prime minister, he went to these camps as a youth, and all the leading figures in the Labour Party, all since the Second World War, who is actually built the Norway we know today. Very specific. that he attacked that, and he had to know this. The person had to know this.
Right. Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Tuna Bringer, who's a professor of cultural anthropology at the University of Bergen in Norway. Clearly, it's difficult to understand the motivation of this person who did such a hideous thing. He did, apparently, in his manifesto entitled 2083, A European Declaration of Independence, where he equates liberalism and multiculturalism with cultural Marxism and suggests that they're out to destroy European Christianity and civilization. And he also refers to a meeting that may well be mythical that took place in London in 2002, where the Knights of the Templar, the Crusaders, got together to form a counterweight to Islamic influence, if you will. So does that fit in with your understanding of this man's political attack on the Norwegian social safety net represented by the Labour Party?
Well, he's clearly also has an ideology of inspired by, I don't know what to call it, but it's clearly, I would say probably ethnic purity. And he is not alone in propagating this kind of fear of, you know, Christian civilization, they're going to be overrun by Islam and so on. And I recognize this from, I'm an anthropologist and I worked in the Balkans and in during the war in Bosnia-Herzegovina, where there was a lot of this kind of rhetoric about protecting Christian civilization from Muslims. So there's a Muslim population there that were the victims, main victims of the war. And I just think that this kind of fear and hate mongering and rhetoric, you know, it does have some sort of audience. It has an audience in Europe, and there are far-right parties that are gaining terrain, which I find scary because, of course, it's both sides of the fence. The extremists, they feed on each other, and they feed on each other's rhetoric, and above all, they feed on fear. So if you can manage to create fear in a population, you know, they can win support. And I think now in Norway there will be a lot of discussion about how we talk about the others, as it were, in inverted commas, how we talk about our new citizens, non-Christian, non-European. And I think also it was actually surprising that this happened in Norway, because the leadership in Norway has been very prudent in how they have approached the problem of Norwegians who are scared and fear the new immigrants in some ways. And I just think that what is very important now is that we do not we're not pushed into this kind of or let ourselves be forced into this kind of fear rhetoric. I think that always fear precedes hatred.
Yes, indeed.
And if you can create an atmosphere of fear, the next will be, you know, people start hating what they fear. And this is what I saw in the war in Bosnia. And that's what I see now. And I think that it's very, very important that his kind of rhetoric, that we do not engage in that kind of rhetoric of fear and hatred.
Well, this may well prove to be difficult given the blow that was struck at the heart of the Labour Party, this brutal attack on the children of the Labour Party elite, and the fact that this fellow that perpetrated it was a member of the right-wing Progress Party, which apparently is similar to the Tea Party here in the United States, in as much as it began as an anti-tax protest but then became very stridently anti-immigrant.
Yes, but I hope that the leaders of the Progress Party, I haven't seen, say, also will come out and maybe rethink their strategies and their use of rhetoric. Now, this person, of course, is not a representative of the Progress Party, but his kind of ideas can play off in certain parts, I think, of this electorate. But he, of course, is also tied up with it's actually his main sphere of where he has been. Can I say the internet? Really, that's been his arena, and he's hooked up with other fellow thinkers, you know, in Europe. And so it's this combination, I think, of living out his fantasies in the internet, and then hooking up. He doesn't. I wouldn't say that he has. I wouldn't say he has any support for these really crazy. That they're really completely crazy ideas and so out of touch with reality. But what I'm thinking is that the Norwegian, I think, just media, and I think there will be discussion about that, and politicians, and we have to sit down and think about how we talk about our political opponents, but also how we talk about Muslims and Islam in particular, because this is the new kind of set up as the new front line in European politics.
Well, indeed, you've got examples next door in Sweden with the far-right Sweden Democrats just being elected. You've got Marine Le Pen, the daughter of the founder of the far-right party, the National Front in France, and and other countries, of course. We've had in the Netherlands, we've had killings of critics of Islam, and in France, of course, a fiercely secular state, you've had banning the veils. So already you have within Europe manifestations of this tensions. And your sense, I take it, is, Dr. Tunabringer, that this could actually have a paradoxically a beneficial effect in terms of healing some of these divides or warning people about going down that path. It's particularly poignant that you should have experienced all this personally in the Balkans.
Yes, yes, exactly. I'm very concerned about. I recognize, you know, these processes and the steps in this, in the process, you know, about going first you start formulating in the public sphere, you know, leaders, politicians, intellectuals, so-called, these kind of ideas that hook up with myths. And old European mythology, and you mentioned, you know, the guy who did all the killings and the Templars and all that. I mean, it was the same in the Balkans, and they hook up with really old kind of European mythical Christian mythology, and you know, the fight with the Muslims and the Ottomans and so on. And it's dangerous. But you see that if you first, and particularly, I think, if you're in a context of now, we don't have that in Norway now. You know, it's a stable country. We do not have an economic crisis. But when you have if there's certain moments in history when things come together, you know, you may have a very, in the former Yugoslavia, you know, the state was disintegrating. The economy was really very, very bad. And people didn't know, you know, couldn't plan the next day, you know, whether they would have enough money to buy bread and things. So there was a lot of insecurity. And then if you then have politicians who move into this kind of context and start using the rhetoric of fear, you know, and blaming the others, of course, there's always an others to blame, it becomes quite dangerous. Fear is our biggest enemy.
Well, you also have, I think, the economic conditions that you referred to in the Balkans, of course, were similar to the economic conditions in Weimar Germany that led to the rise of the Nazis. And unfortunately, things, particularly with the possibility or the likelihood that Greece will default, there may well be some economic problems in the south of Europe in the near future, it would seem. But let's just to sort of wrap up here, Dr. Tunabringer, again, professor of cultural anthropology at the University of Bergen in Norway, just to for our audience to understand what little we know and what we can assume about the motivations of this mass murderer who apparently was able to shoot these young members of the Labour Party elite I think he was there for 90 minutes. It took the police 40 minutes to arrive, and frankly, that's hard to understand. But I think, if you don't mind explaining the historical context here of how, during World War II, the right wing allied themselves with the Nazi occupiers, leading to the leader being Quisling. It's become a word in the vernacular for a traitor and a puppet. And that the post-war Labour Party were the ones that created the social safety net, the social democracy that that Norway represents. In fact, one of the, I think, the leading examples of it in the world today.
Yes, that is correct. And you know, I don't know where he comes from and what kind of ideas he's fed on, except what I read in the newspapers. But I don't see him as a... He's apparently not a neo-Nazi, because we did have, in the 80s, we had some... There was an attack on a first of May, which is a parade on the 1st of May, the Workers' Union, International Workers' Day in Norway, where there was a bomb, and one of the guards was injured. He lost a hand. And this was in the 80s when we had a neo-Nazi movement, groupings in Norway. So they've been there. I mean, these right-wingers, they're far-right-wingers that have links to this the Norwegian Nazi past during the Second World War. And they were, you know, the white supremacists, I guess you could say they were, you know, reveling in Norwegian or ancient Norwegian history and Norse mythology and so on, and you know, the Aryan sort of blonde, blue-eyed supremacy of the Northern Europeans in a way. And so I don't know, I haven't read anything that he has any connections to the neo-Nazi milieu, but of course some of these ideas are very closely linked to some of the more, but it's in a modern, you know,
right,
context with it turns sort of against immigration, and I'm not quite clear. He sounds very confused, this man, and it's hard to say where it comes from, but I guess it's the same, you know, you have in you also had in U.S. after the Oklahoma, you know, you think, okay, so the U.S., that, and what they would say in Europe, you have to look at American society to understand how, you know, a person like this could be, he's a product of American society in a way, you know, I think that the comments were in Europe. And I've tried to think about this, you know, this guy, is he a product of Norwegian society in a way he is, but what kind of, what is it about Norwegian society that's produced this kind of man? But you see, he could have been produced in the U.S., in any country, I guess, in Europe and the Western world, you know, and it's difficult. I think it's early days yet to know, really.
Well, he's more of a reaction to Norwegian society than a product of it, isn't he? Isn't
yes.
he? He's striking against it. I mean, I take it that your first instincts were not similar to what happened here in the United States when Oklahoma City happened. Everybody assumed it was the Islamists, and the first reports out of Norway were that it was Islamists. But I take it, because you knew about this Labour Party camp, and you immediately assumed that this was a right-wing attack on the heart of Norwegian social democracy.
Yes, because it wouldn't have been, I mean, it was so specific, and it has such a specific position in Norwegian history, and this camp, and who would know about it? I mean, so who was not particularly wanting to target, and of course he also targeted the government buildings and the building where that houses the prime minister. So it was definitely he wanted to actually kill the future political leadership of the country,
which he may well have done.
He may well have done. You know, there will be, I've heard some of the interviews with these young people. And also, by the way, it's important to note that these kids, you know, you think it happened in Oslo, but they come from all over Norway. So it's really, it was a microcosm of Norway's youth. They come from all the counties of Norway, across Norway. So every county, every little township, you know, have maybe lost someone. And it's a small country, 4 million people, closely knit, and so it also pulls Norway together. I think it's not just an Oslo thing; it's the whole country, and it says something about, you know, how leadership is recruited. It's not only recruited from the capital; it is genuinely, you know, recruited from all over Norway, from more communities, from cities, and so on. And by the way, I'd like to just say, at the end here, I was so moved because I'm in this small town in Vermont called Townsend. And yesterday I drove past this small store, as an antique store, and they'd put out a Norwegian flag.
Mm. Well, I thank you for joining us as an anthropologist to explain to us your culture and what an obscene anomaly this is in your country. And also, I think we're particularly grateful for the fact that you have had personal experience in the dark side of humanity from the Balkans, and which serves as a warning that perhaps that out of this hideous tragedy maybe some sanity may emerge.
Yes, I hope so.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today,
Dr.
Tuna Bringa. Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Tuna Bringa, who is a professor of cultural anthropology at the University of Bergen in Norway. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with a fellow from the Norwegian Defense Establishment to try and explain how this assassin was able to get arms and uniforms, etc. So stay tuned.